Warning, this podcast is not for the sensitive or for those not ready to mentally, physically, or emotionally grow. Proceed at your own judgment with caution. I am your host, Kiva Coles Benson. Welcome to the Jump Out of the Chunk podcast, your platform to relate, relax, and release. You guys realize how much I've really missed you, but your girl has been working, and I mean working. But guess what, y'all? I'm a master's mommy now. Hold on real quick, I gotta give myself a round of applause. Yes, I absolutely had to take a minute to acknowledge myself because, listen, I work hard and sometimes I don't take a moment to smell the flowers and acknowledge all the hard work that I've done nonstop up until this point. So yes, I took a little bit of a hiatus with posting this podcast because I wanted to enjoy it and I wanted to relax and I wanted to embrace that I did that. And in 2021, I'm reminding myself that I did that. Make sure you do the same. Listen, homies, sisters, whoever you may be, I'm telling you, before we even get into this episode, that you did that and I'm proud of you as much as I'm proud of me. Anyway, me graduating actually segues us into a perfect episode about handling job loss. And what I decided to do was to bring some reliable resources, HR professionals, some that I just met and some that I call family and friend, to come and give us some advice about how to maneuver job loss in general in the middle of a pandemic. Now that many of us are master's degree mommies and daddies, what are we going to do with these degrees? What are we going to do with our resumes? How are we going to transition to move on to bigger and better things? So with that being said, get your pens, get your notebooks ready, and be prepared for a very, very informational podcast episode about what to do when you're filling in the gaps.
Hi, my name is Kiwana Reed. Everyone calls me Ms. Reed. I currently work for the Department of Youth Rehabilitation Services with District of Columbia Government. I've been in HR for about 6 years. I've worked in recruitment. I've done benefits administration. I've done FMLA. I have not done DC FMLA, but I've done Maryland FMLA. I've done training and development. I've hit every HR function outside of actually ER. Everything I've done ER was always with a group of people and everything like that. So I've never done that independently. So my main focus right now, I currently work on recruitment and compliance.
Okie dokie.
My name is Janae. I work for a company called Advantage Engineers. They're an engineering and design consulting firm, specifically in the telecom industry. Basically, they're responsible for building the wireless infrastructure towers that we use for our cell phones. I work as a talent sourcing and diversity specialist. And now I'm doing the training. So I have three different functions, although I was hired for one. So I'm currently building the company's pipeline, expanded the company's internship program from engineering to operations, HR, construction, et cetera, as well as building the company's first diversity committee, and then now kind of doing the assessment of all of the company training, and then creating the content for the training for the employees. I've been in HR for 4 years now, specifically within recruitment. I consider myself like a recruitment generalist because I've done a little bit of recruitment in a little bit of everything, honestly. And then part-time, I work at Target Retail in HR as well. So there I just do like PTO, LOA, and kind of like generalist duties in there.
Okay, and Mitch.
All right, so I'm Mitch. My name is Michael Mitchell. Everybody calls me Mitch. I work for the Department of Juvenile Justice for the state of Georgia. And there I am the jack of all trades, even though my work title is HR specialist. So I do a lot of general's duties with a specialist title.
That happen
all the time. But what I do there specifically is I work in comp and benefits. So I handle, of course, people's time cards, their paychecks, transactions, the benefits, total rewards, FMLA. Now with COVID, I handle FFCRA claims, absence management, LOAs, and the list goes on, as well as being the only data analyst for the state for my agency.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is my second year in HR, kind of like a recent grad, but it's great.
Yay.
Okay, I guess it's my turn now. So just a synopsis, I can't talk today, of why I'm doing this episode. So my cousin's on here, she knows my life, but pretty much back in July of last year, I got laid off for the first time. So I was trying to figure out how to really maneuver that process, because basically for a year, I went through like this ridiculously crazy slippery slope. So I got laid off for 2 months. No, it wasn't too bad. I was looking for a job, found a job, easy peasy. And then I got that job, thought I was fine. I was there for maybe 2 months. They're pretty much like, oh, we like you, but no, you just ain't it, sis. So I'm like, okay. They didn't say it that way, but they're like, we think you're great, but we've been tracking your performance and we feel like you're not a good fit for the position. So I'm like, okay. So it was kind of like a slap in the face. It was very discouraging because I felt like, basically, what am I not doing? Like, am I not good enough? Like, I started to go through one of those phases where I'm just like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm passionate about anymore. Like, it was just really, really, really discouraging, to say the least. And so I found myself kind of just settling, kind of being desperate to find a job to pay the bills. And I landed a contractual position for this company that I thought it would do something for my resume just because it's well known. But I got the role. They made it seem like something it wasn't. And I don't like to say I hate things, but I hated it. And it was nothing like what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So that's been my life for a year. And now I'm kind of trying to take a non-traditional, I guess, approach with taking an MT route. So basically, so MT management trainee.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's important, and it's kind of my due diligence to do something like this, because I feel like people go through these types of things, but they're never transparent about what that looks like. So I wanted to, of course, be transparent about my own experience and just try to gain something from you guys as people in HR and kind of dealing with these kind of things on a daily basis to kind of find out, what is that like? How do you maneuver? Especially in a time where pretty much everybody is losing jobs to no fault of their own because of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Maybe what could I have done differently that, you know, people can benefit from?
So I've been in a similar situation. I was fired for the first time. Actually, I got fired twice in my life. One was a part-time job, so we don't count that. But I got fired for the first time in 2017 from a job I had in Baltimore that I absolutely hated. And I cried because I was like, oh my God, how am I going to pay my bills?
What am I
doing? Yeah. And then I also cried because I was like, whew, I don't got to be there anymore. So it was like, you know, kind of a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had absolutely no idea. I had taken the job just because I needed a job itself at that time anyway. And, It gave me the perfect time to, I'm a hustler. I'm gonna be real with you. I started driving for Lyft for that whole month. I always keep a side job. I'm just that person. And I still had my serving job and I was doing that. And the money, and I was not being paid well at that job at all. The amount of money I was making in 25 hours driving for Lyft was the same amount or more than what I was making at that job I had gotten fired from. So.
What a peace of mind.
Yeah, it really,
amen.
Helped me gain perspective. And I will say that it helped because it really forced me to leave Baltimore. I was living in Baltimore at the time and I didn't want to be there anyway. And it helped me like kind of like really aim and focus on finding jobs in DC, which is where I did want to be regardless. Unfortunately, I did take a job that was good for my career, I would say, but bad for my mental, emotional, and physical health. And I honestly went through that for about the last two jobs that I had. That job was I gained in 2017, and I was actually laid off this year too. So it's been a little
road happening.
Yeah, I was laid off before COVID though. I was laid off 2 weeks before COVID, before quarantine happened. So I had about four offers that were put on hold because of quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried when I got laid off from that job because I was like, I only cried the first day. I was like, all right, I've been fired before. It's not as bad as laying off. I'm getting a severance package, so it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I lived my best life. For those 2 weeks we had outside, I was at a Wizards game every other day. I was so happy. And I was very transparent. When I lost my job, I started reaching out to my network like crazy, but I was strategic about the way I went about it. You know, I had gotten fired, I think it was on a Wednesday. I didn't tell anybody until that Thursday. And I wrote this very long, compelling post on LinkedIn because I'm an advocate for LinkedIn. I think if you learn how to use it and mm-hmm. you use it to your benefit, it will be anything. It will be amazing for you. I wrote a post that appealed to people's emotions, which is what I wanted to do. I did not say anything disrespectful about my former employer, although I did want to. And I took the high road, and that brought a lot of attention to me. I had random people reaching out to me who didn't know me. And they were like, I really like your perspective on your job loss and how you're looking at things now. I want to help you. I want to refer you for a job. I just want to like connect you with somebody I know. And that is what happened for me. And I was still without a job for 11 weeks this year. And when I finally found something, for me, it was the most important to really look for the type of environment that I wanted to be in and not just take the first opportunity. A lot of people don't know that I did get an offer that wasn't rescinded. Well, it kind of got rescinded. I actually turned it down because they weren't trying to pay me what I was worth. And I knew that there was a risk I was taking because I didn't have a job. And, you know, nobody knew that Corona was, you know, the quarantine was going to happen, but it was a risk I was willing to take. It was the best decision that I ever made. And me looking at the type of environment I wanted to be in, the type of team that I wanted to be on, was something that that I've kind of used forward in kind of going now. Really taking that time to not put my worth into my work. That is the main thing I will say to anyone, like not putting your self-worth into your profession, because you can lose that job any day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just time to really self-reflect.
So my question for you is, when you went to, you said you rescinded, you declined the job offer that they offered you because of the culture, right?
No, because of the money.
Because of the money. I thought it was culture. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. But I have in other companies decided to just not go forward with interview processes because of things that I've noticed during the interview.
Okay.
I don't do micromanagement. That's one of the questions I ask in an interview. What is your management style? And if you say you're hands off, cool. If you say, you know, I like to, I'm like, we ain't gonna work.
I've never been fired before, but I've recruited people with job loss. And I think you get, outside of recruitment, outside of work, whatever happens to your life, you got one day to cry about it. You get one day to cry about it. You can't cry about it for 2 weeks. You can't cry about it until you think you're over. You have literally one day to cry about it because everybody's life went on but yours. And that's not fair. You'll never move on from it, so you only get one day to cry about it, regardless, job, family, whatever. Unless it's like, you know, but you know what I mean. So, I've hired people and I've hired people with job loss due to the Corona and everyone just said to the COVID pandemic and the hiring managers, it was never a red flag. But when someone loses a job, I've seen hiring managers to say, can we request their performance evaluation? Or can we, I'm telling you, can we request their performance evaluation? Can we, I don't want to do this, but you know, can we do that? I've heard hiring managers try to just go all around the way to get in people's business. That's none of their business, basically. The only thing a company can technically tell you is if you're eligible for rehire or not. And that's what I would ask.
So if, say if, well, now I thought this is the perfect cover up. I would just tell everybody I lost my job due to the pandemic. It is what it is. Just say I lost it due to the pandemic. And they can't verify that because you're protected. Only thing they can say is you're eligible for rehire or not. And because of the pandemic, you might, if they say you're not eligible for rehire, it just might look like they ain't got no money. So, depending on, it all depends on how you work it, honestly. I've, the only job I didn't give a notice to was Walmart. Time in my life when I got pregnant with my son before I even started working with HR, and I got pregnant with him, and I applied back to Walmart, and Walmart did not hire me. And I was just like, Walmart? Okay, Walmart. Like, I was hurt by it. But for dealing with any job loss, I think you should only cry about it for one day. Because if you take that with you on the interview, you're not going to do well. If you take that mindset with you, regardless, it's just, it's going to alter your thinking, and you're not going to answer the question to know what you're capable of, and know, especially if you really know what you're doing, it shouldn't matter. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Mitch, have you seen that in your area? And, you know, what does that look like for you?
I actually probably got my job as a recruiter in staffing probably like the worst time this year, which was in January. I just got back from DC. Mm-hmm. I had interned at Georgetown, got back, got a job at a staffing company, corporate side. And everything was great for like the first 8 weeks, hitting all my goals, my metrics, and then the virus hit. And of course, at that point, if you're not that experienced in staffing recruiting, your numbers are going to fall. And when your numbers fall in corporate, you don't last very long. So I actually end up getting fired, laid off, how you ever want to look at it, because they're trying to save money. So of course they're going to only keep their top performers. And with that, of course, like I'm kind of panicking because like, I just moved back. I've only been working for like 2-3 months. Haven't really had enough time to save up any money. So it's like, I'm looking for a job. And I actually ended up taking some advice and getting on LinkedIn and being very aggressive in how I found my next job. Using my network, leveraging my network, reaching out to people who, one, looked like me, and that would at least give me a chance, even though I didn't have that much experience, because a lot of times in HR, you don't get very far with 3 months of experience. And that's just the reality of HR. But they end up giving me a chance, and I end up getting the position that I work now. And here I am 8 months later and I'm thriving. So that kind of like is a testament to like how much LinkedIn can benefit you if you learn how to leverage it the right way. Barebone LinkedIn profiles don't get seen. People who are silent on LinkedIn, of course, don't get seen. If you don't DM people and use your emails and stuff like that, like you have to use all those things to your advantage, as well as like liking and resharing posts that you see and having your network like and reshare. That way it expands out to their network as well.
Who do you reach out to on LinkedIn? Is it kind of one of those things like, how do you target who you're reaching out to? Okay, that's so probably would be a better question to ask.
Here's the recipe. When LinkedIn has a job section, and the job section is going to tell you the company, every legit company has a LinkedIn page. So what you do is you go to that company's profile, you click people. On the search, you type in recruiter, talent acquisition, hiring manager, like whatever that looks like for that company. And it's going to show you every recruiter, everybody in talent acquisition, everybody in HR, and you find somebody. And you reach out to a couple of them. Because any recruiter that's doing their job is going to read their LinkedIn messages. Every recruiter. Like I personally don't know a recruiter that doesn't use LinkedIn that's successful in being a recruiter.
With the transparent post, like, you know, as I said, I appeal to people's emotions. So I kind of started, I'm not going to lie, my post was a little dramatic, but it made people feel. And that's what I was doing. So I think I started it off with like something along the lines, like I'm feeling these emotions of X, Y, Z. I'm sad. I'm hurt. I'm angry. These feelings are cyclical. Never did I ever think I would be laid off. fortunately, I was able to join this company and do, and I literally listed all the things I did in that company, all the my language ish that I did for that company. and then I just ended it with like, you know, this isn't, this is redirection from God. I know that a blessing is coming. Like, that's what I did. And so when people read it, they was like, oh, this is a testimony. And I was like,
okay,
that's exactly why I wrote it the way I wrote it. So you felt compelled to reach out and have to help. Exactly.
Okay. I've done it. I've seen stuff on LinkedIn as well. I'll be like, here are the positions I have available too. So.
And I did it for, I did it, I think, once every few weeks, and I would just change the post around. Like, oh, you know, recruiters, you know, I've spoken to some people, I've been ghosted recruiters. Let's remember to just speak to XYZ people. And in that paragraph, I had my experience as well. Like, I did, I was on it until somebody found me.
Okay, so we would say that pretty much LinkedIn is one of the strongest tools of leverage that you have in order to kind of to maneuver that.
As a candidate, like, yeah, I search everybody.
Okay, that's good to know. Because I use mine, but I probably could use it more. Like, I don't engage on it.
I don't engage on LinkedIn,
I do keep it updated and things like that. One of the last but big things I also worry about is like with your resume, especially when you haven't been anywhere that long, how do you not look high risk on your resume? Because I know that that's like a thing doing the research, and it's like, oh, well, I did an interview once for another company for another MT role. And they're like, my concern is it seems like every year you're on a new venture. And I'm sitting there like, well, it's not my fault kind of thing. And I know nobody really wants to hear that, but it's kind of exhausting when you have to give the explanation. Like, it's not like I'm quitting every job that I have. Like, I've been kicked to the curb.
No. So, you don't even have to tell them that. I think that really depends on age, on who's hiring you. Because if a millennial's hiring you or anything, or any someone Generation Z, X, below that, they know that we don't stay jobs that anyway. No one's asking that question.
Any other job. That was the thing I said. He's never worked anywhere else but there.
Exactly. And then they stay there and take the little 10% that they give employees for promotion. No.
And I'm like, for the little bit of money they were trying to offer, it was probably one of the most uncomfortable interviews I've ever had. Because I just felt like he was just stabbing me. And it made me even more pissed because he was a Black man. And it's just like, I'm telling you, I'm just taking the time to be transparent about my experience. And it's just, you've been on a new venture every year. And then it's like, I didn't even get the job. But I was like, man, I don't care because y'all wasn't paying me jack anyway. But it was just like, it was intense. And I'm like, I've never had a job or interview that uncomfortable.
So this is what I tell people in school, recent grads, people who are more junior in their experience. Your LinkedIn is like a resume, right? You want to put your best foot forward. There is information, i.e. positions, that you can omit. You don't have to put them on there.
You do not.
Trust me, I have had way more jobs than my LinkedIn shows because I keep a side job, like I said. I removed the first job I had when I graduated from college 6 years ago. I removed that from my resume. There was no space for it anymore. I was like, well, bye.
Was it an HR job?
It wasn't I didn't move into HR until 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that was by accident. I fell into HR.
You fell.
And I stayed here and I like it. But you can also do on the resume and on your LinkedIn, because they'll never know unless you tell them, is you can put in parentheses contract.
Good to know. Contract. I didn't even know if it was worth putting my contractual position on there, to be honest. But
if the experience,
so I did take that one off.
But I'm saying, even the job that you didn't have very long, put contract next to it. They don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Even if I was only there for like 5 months.
No, I'm saying, yeah. Like, let's say you had a full time job that you were there for 9 months. Just put it with a contract.
Mm-hmm. Like, contract? I guess, is there a change. Time frame?
There's
okay.
no set
or time I guess frame. The better question is, is there a set amount of time that you should have been in a certain position at a certain place before it's qualified or appropriate to put it on your resume?
Girl, you talking to a serial job hopper. No.
If the experience is relevant to whatever you're applying for, it needs to be on your resume.
There.
Yeah, okay. I've never stayed at a job for longer than a year and a half.
We don't. It doesn't happen in our generation at all.
And I had someone tell me.
It's gone on the resume.
Yeah. Someone told me before, and it was a Black woman, unfortunately, too, working at a staffing firm. And I have my own personal issues with recruiters at staffing firms. I've always been an internal recruiter. I have my own personal issues with the way they move. But she told me you need to be at a company for 2 years before another company will consider you. Baby.
Not true.
Look at these jobs.
Right. This is pretty much what I've been told. I had a girl who pretty much, she has a similar path to me, like in marketing. And she was like, your resume is really good. Like, you've done it all, but it just looks like you ain't been nowhere long. And I'm like.
But that's the marketing person saying it to you, right?
Yes.
She's not the person reviewing resumes. I'm sorry.
Just like I
said. So even though she's in my field, it wasn't appropriate for her to have given me that advice.
Yeah, she should give you advice about marketing because that's what she does, in my opinion.
Sharon looks at resumes.
I had a recruiter tell me at the time, I think I had 3 years of, I had 2 years of experience, I think, in recruitment, or 3 years. I don't remember when I talked to this lady. She's like, oh, you're not going to be able to make over 70K with your little years of experience. I said, watch me.
They said, why are these people saying this stuff to you guys?
What is it? That's something to talk about. What is it with this negative connotation with these things? Or why doesn't anyone talk about the quality of the jobs that we have to take and all these other things that you have to consider that I'm not even in a space where I can even give these people 2 years of my time? You're not giving me any raises. I'm doing something that I really don't want to do. You claim I'm going to get these raises, these promotions, all this experience that I don't get. Why don't people talk about these things?
Because it's a taboo. At the end of the day, the average raise is only 1-5%, right? You can increase your salary by 10-50% just leaving your job. Your salary is not going to, sometimes it might go up to 8%, but that's if you're going to like, you know, a pretty high position and you're taking on an influx of duties. But I know a guy, and Mitch knows him too. That man, I don't know if he stayed at the job for longer than a year before. Okay. He is a job hopper, but now he is the head of labor and relations at Instacart.
That's nice.
That is a good one.
I started listening to him
after 8 months.
See,
good to know. Can you slide him my phone number? Because listen,
where does he live?
Cali,
right?
Y'all just wondering.
All of us to go there, and we're not.
Yeah.
Now, one of my professors took a position in HR with Facebook, and he was like, yeah, I'm packing up my stuff now. I'm ready to go. And I was like, I don't have the, I don't know, I got the luxury to just pack my stuff
up and go.
No.
Yeah.
What about Facebook is now that they're remote.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, this is when I was in grad school.
That's something to consider.
But everyone should be remote now. And now that we see that this job can be done for all these months, I don't see why we're going in the office. If you really care about, you know, that work-life balance that you was presenting and selling me during the interview.
That's a facade. That's just a facade there.
I don't know. My job is a 24/7 organization. I haven't really been in the facility since the pandemic started.
Okay.
And they're open right now. That's why I had issues logging in, because I was still logged into work. I work at a juvenile correctional facility. There are people still at work. Stuff still happen now. People still fight each other right now. Every stuff like that. My timeline is still weekends count, because I'm a 24-hour. We are a 24-hour organization. Goodness. So if we can work from home, I don't know. That is now be one of the questions I'll ever ask going on any interview. Whatever my next looks like. So
I will say one thing about
marketing. No, what I'm
definitely a who you know type of thing, and who knows you. So you have to
And definitely. I'm still trying to figure out how to do that.
So and I always tell people this. Yes. Like, network are the people that it doesn't necessarily mean just reach out to a whole bunch of people. Oh, let's network real quick and then, like, you know, we're connected. And I think that's a misconception that universities fail to teach students, because I don't think a lot of schools teach students how to properly network, except I will give it to certain schools. Like, I know Emory University teaches those students how to network, and I have a friend that went there. That's why I know that. But my school didn't, of course. I went to Johns Hopkins University, of course, you know, private HBCU. I see you, girl, with Morgan State. really, the organic connections, like us having a conversation right here, right? We have now, in a sense, networked. Right. Getting to know each other, we're talking to each other, and that's a network you've expanded to right then and there. And what you do is you just continue to connect with people and don't listen to the fear in your head, the fear of asking for help. I think a lot of us struggle, especially as Black women, asking for help because we're so used to, well, I'll just do this.
And men,
it doesn't work like that in the corporate world, because corporate was not built. Yeah. We have to leverage the network, basically just reaching out to people, asking people a question, talking to some of your friends. Some of your friends might have an uncle or an aunt that works somewhere, that knows somebody somewhere, and they'll talk to you somewhere, and then you get connected somewhere, or somebody knows someone. And then even utilizing social media. I think people use social media as a way to just talk to each other, but they don't realize that that's also their network.
That is true. I've hired a nurse off of Instagram.
I love it.
Nice.
And it was because her husband posted a picture with her in her, I needed a nurse practitioner.
In her uniform?
Hard to find. I swear, hard to find. Then you got to be certified in D.C. So it was just, I was just like, I just DM'd him like, is your wife looking for a job? And she works for my company. Like, I hired a nurse off of Instagram. And I was like, nice. I know she called me, but I need a nurse. And she was like, well, let me see. I was like, it's a grade 13. It's a salary bang, whatever. And she works for my job. So it does work. But I also, I don't know. I would, because I kind of know who he is and how I portray myself on Instagram, I would never really do that on a daily basis.
You did what you had to do, though.
I just did what I had to do.
How do you feel being an African-American man in HR or just in the workforce in general? What is that like for you?
Well, I think HR is really like a different, it's like a beast of its own, because a lot of corporate positions generally tend to be very heteronormative. But it's not like that in HR. It's actually the exact opposite. Where in places where I normally would be the majority, I'm actually the minority. Specifically in my office, there's only 3 males that work there. In the entire Office of Human Resources. So I think that a lot of men struggle with having to check their ego at the door, because that won't get you far in HR. It won't get you far in life in general, no matter who you are. But more importantly, it is in HR, like, nobody cares that you're a man, I promise you. Or you're there to do a job, and that's hard for a lot of men to do because they're used to always being in control of everything, doing what they want to do, not having to answer to anybody. There's not really any such thing as a boys club in HR. Even at the top, there really isn't a boys club, except for very small pockets of HR, depending on what industry you work in. But it also gives you an opportunity to shine because there's only a very few select number of you. So if you do really well, it's going to be why people are going to pay attention. But if you do poorly, that's also going to, it's going to stick out more because there's not a lot of people to hide behind.
Learning that, I guess.
To love it to do.
I don't know. It's just funny being HR professionals, how you guys experience the same things that us people who are trying to get through y'all experience. That's very, like, I don't know if I want to say taboo or coincidental,
but
like,
that's
funny
it.
Though.
When we apply for the position, everybody interviewing,
like everybody HR else,
everybody's HR at that point. Right. So now it's a matter of like, oh, you know, at this point, may the best person.
That must be harder. That must be harder. I've never thought about it that way. So it's like, I don't feel alone anymore. I mean, I never really was. I was probably being dramatic, but that's how I felt. Like, am I tripping? Am I a serial job hopper? Like, I just was, I'm like, what am I not doing? Like, I was just like, I have to do something. This is not working out. Like, my life is just ghetto. Just ghetto. I was like, I don't like this.
That's our entire generation. And for someone, if a hiring manager was to say that, I don't like that she keeps leaving jobs like that, I would I would defend that. I've defended a lot of strangers that I don't know because someone brought that up saying, like, you don't know. They probably didn't have growth in that position. Why would you stay somewhere and it wasn't going to grow? I was like, you don't. Right. Like, I was going to say, I'll say so many things to still make that person come to the table or the interview and prove it. Be like, oh, look, I am right. That good. I just decided not to. I've done that plenty of times.
Definitely.
And if a company says that to you, that's a red flag. You possibly don't want to be there anyway.
Absolutely don't want to be there. Or it's even more frustrating when you feel like you get into a role and then they renege on you, basically. Like, again, when that second position, when it was just like, oh, well, we think you're great, but we've been tracking your performance, which I was confused about. I'm like, I've only been here for 2 months.
Yeah. Did you have weekly one-on-ones?
No, none of that. I have weekly one-on-ones. There was no discussion about what these performance goals were. And there was nothing. I was showing up to work every day and doing my part. And then, you know, it was never. I was only there for 63 days. Literally.
Usually, you know, they'll give you an idea of what they want you to have accomplished within the first 30
days. Nothing. They gave me none of that. They gave me none of that. There was no conversation. And she came in there and basically said, like, we like you. Like, we like you, but it's not. That's no. And I'm looking like, are you serious right now? Black woman. Again. And black woman.
That's a whole nother chapter.
That's a whole nother chapter that we would have to part two on. Otherwise, we would be here all night. But that one really hurt me because I'm like, it made me a little bit cynical about my own people, and over top of the fact that she was a woman.
Yeah, that bothers me.
But that hurt me. I'm not gonna lie, it hurt me.
So create your own one-on-one next time. Does that sound crazy?
No.
Create your own one-on-one. Just go in and be like,
hey, I did start asking I would ask.
Do you like what I'm doing today? After every meeting I had with my super bowl since COVID hit, I didn't ask anymore because it is what it is. But after every meeting I asked with my supervisor, it was like, is there anything you feel like I need to work on? Is there anything I need to do better? Anything? And then get it all in writing. I do that every meeting. I've learned a lot. I've realized there were some things that I was supposed to do that I never knew was a thing, and vice versa. She learned how I felt about things and why I was doing certain things the way I did, and it kind of covered me.
Right.
So I had those difficult conversations. The worst thing they can say is you suck. So what? If somebody tell you something, oh, well.
One thing I've learned.
Like, yeah, if someone says something that's negative, or if it's, and they'll dress it up, they'll say whatever, but basically it'll boil down to like, you suck. Someone says that, oh well, people need to get over that. I've been told no plenty of times. I've negotiated salaries and they told me get out their face. I've told no plenty of times. I'll just be like, oh well, they told me no, and just keep going. You got to. Life will beat you up.
Yeah,
and
that's the truth.
I just can't lie down.
I'm not a lie down. That's not me, but I was just like, I'm getting sick of it. Like, it was discouraging. It was.
I will create my own one-on-ones, write everything that was said during that one-on-one, and say, here's the things that I feel like we should work on and everything like that going forward. So your supervisor, whoever it is, my supervisor just happened to be HR, so she kind of knows that I'm covering me. So she looks at it a little differently, but it don't matter. Do that going forward, and I bet you it'll put it in writing. They'll have a more difficult time. But don't be, if the company is lacking in an area, do not say, I'm sorry, I'm not mean to say lacking. I'm so sorry, I'm mixing both. But if a company is not proficient in an area where you feel like they should be, we can't say because y'all ain't do this or because what needs to be done over there, because they're going to try to hurt you whatever way they can, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You can't look at them like they're your friend.
How do you communicate that?
It depends on whatever the issue is. Oh, okay. No, bring it up because you got to cover yourself. But it just depends on whatever the issue is.
And ask to work on it. Ask to take on that additional task.
Well, is there any training?
Think of a solution before you come with a problem.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, sure. Bingo. Okay.
You do things that only you know how to do.
You gotta be that go-to person without being without dumping. When they dump more projects on you, you be like, "Oh, right, they like me." You irritated. Oh, you definitely irritated. Like, why are you doing this to me? But you know what? Oh, right, I'm doing something right. So being that go-to person without work it being piling up and everything. So
that's good to know. I've learned a lot. So leverage your LinkedIn. Use it. Be dramatic within reason if you need to be. You got to do what you got to do. So listen, I'm good for being dramatic when I got to be. What else did we say? Create your own one-on-ones. That's one I've never thought about before. Like to actually just say, can we, because in my mind, I thought that would be
your like job.
the bottom of the standards of what you do when you work for a company, you know, but apparently not. What else? Am I missing anything?
Leverage
the network. Don't worry about the fact that you haven't been somewhere long. If it applies, use it. Because that was my biggest thing. I'm like, they're going to look and be like, you ain't even been here that long. Like, you can't use this. This is, like, irrelevant. So, okay.
And
I'm not tripping. Moral of the story. I'm not tripping.
If we're doing highlights, whatever company you decide to apply to, I mean, I don't know. All my HR jobs been in government. So, it's kind of, I worked in the private sector once and I was an assistant and I hated it. But learn the recruitment process for whatever you're applying to.
Okay, that's a good one.
Learn the recruitment process for whatever you're applying to. It looks different in different phases, but it's the same. It just they do certain things different.
No, I wanted to go, girl. I have to just add to what you're saying because,
yeah, learn the recruitment process for whenever you plan to. So if someone already worked there, don't say, can you get me in? Say, what happened when you applied? It's a different answer. And you'll get how they got in. So, because you know how some people be like, oh, how you work there? Whatever. They get funky and stingy. Don't want to.
Yeah,
you.
Definitely.
You don't need to worry about that anyway. So just say what happened when you applied. And then learn that recruitment process that way and get yourself in.
And understand for a FANG Moolah. FANG is FAANG, Moolah, MULA, which is Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Microsoft, Uber, Lyft, Airbnb.
Wait, I'm learning something.
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah, but that's
in text. So you know, I have
make sure I'm about to say text that to us. Hey, we're gonna start a thread.
Yeah, I'm gonna text that to you because I know it's long. There's a minimum of 4 interviews with them.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I know Google has 6 interviews. That's why I said minimum. But like, 4. Facebook is 4. I don't really know Lyft, Airbnb, or Uber, and I wouldn't even suggest applying. They have layoffs once a quarter every year, so they're not even
working. Oh, wow.
Uber.
For who?
Learn a lot from the blind app. Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb.
So who are you interviewing with 4 times? I'm sorry.
People on it. So when I interviewed with Microsoft, who the heck did I interview with? I have 4 interviews for Capital. Capital One has 4 interviews, too. At this point, that was so long ago, girl.
Four interviews. You're not about to waste my time. So obviously, like, see, that's the thing. So by interviewing somebody 4 times, I mean 4 rounds of interviews, you obviously don't care about time to fill, recruitment costs, or things like that. Or they do care. They just got so much money that it don't matter. Or
right,
process that everyone has to go through, and it's not just one person coming in. They have what they call interview days. So in interview days, there's an influx of people interviewing, possibly for the same position or for different positions for the company. So like, let's say for the position I interviewed for, there was like 5 or 6 of us, but if it was like an engineering interview day, it would be 30 people coming in. And then after that, they have their like, I guess, I don't want to say intake, because your intake meeting is prior to, you know, kind of going and sourcing, but they have like a, what do you call it? Like, I guess the summarizing meeting in a sense, like the review. And then they go over the candidates and everyone's notes based upon that. They compare it. And I guess it's like, I don't know if it's 3 out of 4, then you get hired, or if it's like majority has to rule. I don't exactly know how they decide on the back end, but it is 4 people. And I know with Google, it's a panel of 6. So, yeah.
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, I'm gonna stay in the
public sector. She's like, I'm gonna stay. Yeah, sometimes it's some stuff that you deal with that make you want to just be like, I'm gonna stay where I'm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's good practice.
It is good. Yeah. Yes,
it's everything. Always. Everything is good practice, and everything that you do. But sometimes it's just emotionally freaking draining. And that's just the big thing for me. I'm like, okay, I'm young. It's not the end of the world. Yes. But one, my bills are due. And two, it's just like, you know, I done got a degree. I'm getting a master's. Like, I'm like, I don't want time to be going through all of this. I deserve stability. I deserve to be paid well. I deserve to know what the heck I'm signing up for. Like, it's just certain things that I'm just like, I know what I deserve at this point, and I know my worth, and I'm sick of going through this.
But listen, so,
good to know that I'm not tripping.
I'm not no company's person, but with that mindset, you might need to start your own. You might need to start your own. You might need to figure it out what it is. Yeah, no, nothing's easy. Oh, God, no.
The process is going to be what it is. This is what
it takes time. You know, so until then.
Yeah. Well, exactly. But what I want you to do. Interviewing with these companies, give them enough, but don't give them too much. What you don't want to do is free consulting. You don't want to give them a step-by-step in every little process that you're doing. You don't want to give them all the tools that you're using, because you don't want to be in a situation where they don't hire you and they use your idea. It happens too many times.
It does. I've done it. So.
Yeah. I've done it.
Wow. Okay. Well, guys, a lot to take in, but it was good. Anything else? Any last little tidbits of recommendations or important points that you feel like people can make use of, or even me, because this was equally as for me as it was for other people who were going to listen to it.
Something.
Your professors. A lot of the adjunct professors that work there, maybe, you know, teach one class, a lot of them have professions in these top companies.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend of mine, he teaches cybersecurity at Morgan State as an adjunct professor, but full-time he's a cybersecurity consultant for Accenture. I don't know if his students know that.
Wow.
Especially in grad school, your teachers,
they
do whatever they're teaching.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So another one of those opportunities to leverage those networks.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. Yeah. So start sending my email since I'm about to graduate. Put that on my checklist.
And get a Mitch?
Mentor. Hold on. What she said? You broke up.
You said
get a mentor.
Oh, yeah. Get a marketing one.
Yes.
I have a hard time finding a one of those, because I feel like the one I had is going through the same thing I'm going through.
Get three mentors if you can. One who is a Black woman that looks like you, that works in marketing.
I got one of those.
One who is a man, and one who, he can be Black or non-Black, but one, and a third mentor, it can be a male or female, but they definitely have to be non-Black, non-POC, if you catch my drift. Somebody called me a coon for saying this, but this is just the way it is. There are doors they are going to get into that we will never be able to get into unless you have them there, period. That's just what it is. It wasn't made for us. Mm. It's unfortunate.
That's factual. But that's what it is. That's the world we live in. And if you don't know that by now, then you're living under the rock of all rocks.
Yeah.
Mitch? Anything else that you would like to share that you believe that people, men, or anyone in HR or whatever could benefit from?
Really important that, especially when you're young, to sit down with your manager and get a career path, like that career path plan. Mm. It's like, you need to be doing this at this point. You need to be doing this one. Like, people in this position, they did this and they got here. And like, you got to go forward like that, because a lot of times you'll be working a position and you'll be doing perfectly fine. You'll be doing enough to get by, but you're not doing what they want you to do to get promoted. And that's why a lot of people don't move up.
That is a good one.
That's a good one.
It's called succession planning.
Succession planning.
Oh,
success planning. Succession.
Yeah, succession.
Yeah, I know. So like when your manager moves up, somebody has to take your manager's space. And if
you
your criteria, you're not doing what they're expecting you to do, you're just gonna be a top performer. You're just gonna be working hard every day for no reason.
Now, that is a way to get promoted, is to create your own avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're doing, if you're just good at whatever that is, I've seen positions created for that person. I've seen a person get promoted and they built the whole department under them because they are that good or whatever they do. So when people be like, is there growth in the organization? You know, the questions at the interview, do you have growth? And I answer, well, we do have growth because, you know, government, we go from 1 to 2 or 2 to 3, or depending on how that goes, whatever grade, depending on the government entity. But at the same time, you can create your own avenue. You can create your own lane depending on whatever you're good at.
Okay.
The private sector, I believe, I don't know. I know they say that it's a relaxed environment. And
it's fine.
That's what they look, but like, look at my nails. Like, my nails are long. Depending on the situation, what day it is, I might wear lashes to work, depending on the situation, whatever the case may be. Granted, I look extremely professional when I go to work, but as long as I know what I'm doing and doing it great, they don't care about how long my nails is or whatever the case may be. And I don't know if it's like that in the private sector. Do I have to wear a skirt?
I used to work for a consulting firm. And in my consulting firm, we were business professional 5 days a week. Okay. Dressed down was when the president decided he wanted to be nice. So I wasn't going to work with long nails and really long lashes. When I was getting my lashes done, I would be like, Courtney, not too long. You know, my office don't play that.
Yeah. Now,
my office, I can go to work whatever the heck I want to wear.
See.
So depends on the company, honestly.
Right.
Oh, okay. I wear slacks and everything and stuff like that all the time, especially when I got interviews or whatever. When I do interviews, I still throw on a blazer, whatever the case may be. But this is me.
But those nails, huh? Those click clacks.
This is my heels to work because I can't go nowhere. So someone's gonna get these heels. So
yes, I wear heels on interviews. I got heels on because y'all gonna see that I like, you know. So
that's right.
But not every day. I don't wear heels every day. It's just an interview thing.
Really? I wear heels, but like I said, because I bought so many shoes and it's COVID, where are we going? Where are we going? We're going nowhere.
I gotta wear them somewhere.
Y'all gonna get these club shoes.
Somebody gonna see these.
But
poor bitch, she like, these are women problems. And
it's
like, this is above me.
No, not even that. Same with the, I don't know, I got the culture of an organization, it really matters to me. If we could find better ways to determine the culture of an organization before we get there and be like, oh my God, did I make a good decision or not? That would be helpful.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I am 100% agree with that because they lie. They lie. Yes. Oh yeah, the culture here is great. Everyone's nice. Everyone gets along, gets lit. And then you're getting here and you're like, according to whose scale? Because it ain't mine.
Not what the employees say.
Huh?
Like when they say the culture is great, that's according to what the managers say and the director and everybody in leadership.
So you really got to find people that work there at this point and ask them. Right. Networking. Back to networking.
You got to be careful.
Back to networking.
They'll snitch on you.
No, don't do that. They're not your friend. You don't talk to people like how they're your friends. You talk to them as if that you just met them. Like, how is it there? Do you like it? And they was like, oh, okay. What's your hours? Ask them stuff that they won't think. Y'all got to trick these questions to see what they really get into. Yeah, you got to say, what's your hours? If they say, oh, 8, you know, whatever, show up. Okay, they're not that relaxed. You know, depending on if they work late hours, that mean they demanding. The man don't get off till 7 when he should get off at 5. You know what I mean? You got to pay attention. X, what's your hours? X about the uniform or the dress code. X questions that around the box to get the culture. But that's the only way you can find out is from somebody that works there.
Mm-hmm.
And not a supervisor or a hiring manager. I'm good at what I do. So if you're good at what you do, it shouldn't matter. And if it does matter where I'm working at, I don't want to work there. And depending on how I'm talking, my mouth don't even open like that.
You are a piece of work. You're a piece of work. But all right.
I had so much
fun recording this episode, and I hope that you all gain something from it. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Junk Out the Trunk podcast. Again, I am your host, Kiva Coles Benson, and you all enjoy the rest of your evenings.